Mismo de David. Adonai roi loyach sor dinaste sheyar vitzayni amei minuchos yinaleini. Nafshi yishovev yanacheini v'madlei tzedek leman shemo. Kam ki yelech begei tzamo v'esloi rerok yatoi modi. Shivtucho mishantechahem yinachamuni. Taroch lefonai shulachon neged etzoreroi. Nishan tova shemen roshi kosi revoyo Ach tova chesed yirdefuni koyemei chayoi Vishavti beveis Adonai leorech yomim. Psalm of David. Hashem is my shepherd, I shall not lack. In lush meadows he lays me down, beside tranquil waters he leads me. He restores my soul, he leads me on paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in full view of my adversaries. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. May only goodness and kindness pursue me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord for the length of days. Nafla teret v'sheinu, oina lanu, ki chatanu. Chazal tell us that there are certain things that one may not do in a synagogue because of its great sanctity. And amongst them is a eulogy or a funeral, with an exception. And the Gemara Megillah states, Maspidim behem hesped shel rabbi. A eulogy for one who is a leader of the city, in which all the members of the community gather, can and should take place in the Beit Midrash or the Beit Knesset. Le'echad migdolei ha'ir, shekol b'nei ha'ir mitkapcim uba'im lehasfido, codifies the Shulchan Aruch. The tour, quoting with Haigon, goes even further and asks, what about bringing the mace into the shul? And he answers precisely why we are here today. Chacham ve'aluf ve'gaon. Machnisin oto lebeit ha-midrash, machnisin ha-mita b'makom shi'adaresh, besoftin ha-tamidim v'kahal Yisrael. The Talmud Chacham of the city, the giant, the gaon. You bring the Aron into the Beit Knesset, to the Beit Midrash, opposite his seat, and there the community gathers. If the Chacham is the Av Beit Din, writes the Torah, Kol Batei Midrashot Shebeir B'telin, and all the synagogues and all the Batei Midrash come together to pay homage and respect. And that is what brings us here tonight, for this Levaya of a Gadol who served our community as its chief rabbi and Av Beit Din. There is, however, an additional halacha that Rav Rivkin, in his towering greatness, enabled us to observe today. Yerushalmi in Moed Katan quotes Rabbi Abau as saying that when one experiences the passing of a Talmud Chacham, it is as if they have witnessed the burning of a Sefer Torah. For a Talmud Chacham is a living embodiment of Torah. And therefore concludes Rabbi Abau, Yavo alai, im ta'amti klum kol oto hayom, on such a day, I would observe a fast day. We all observed a fast day today, because a walking, breathing, living Sefer Torah has been taken from us. The Medrash says that the death of Aaron's two sons are recorded in connection to Yom Kippur, because Kishem Shiyom Kippurim Mechaper Kach Mitat Tzadikim Mechaperet, just as Yom Kippur brings atonement, the death of the righteous brings atonement. And on this comment, the Torah Tmima writes that it is the Evel Ve'akavod Shenoagim B'mitat Tzadikim. It is the honor and the kavod that the community pays to the tzaddik, that is what brings atonement. Tonight, our community, the community that Rav Rifkin devoted his life to, his mosir nefesh for, and led with the Chachma of Torah for so many years, has come together to pay him kavod. May this kavod evoke the rachamim of the Ribbono Shel Olam and serve as a kapara for all of Israel. I want to take this opportunity as we begin to thank Berger Memorial for enabling us to be here tonight and going above and beyond in order to make this happen, and we thank them sincerely. There will be 3 masbidim this evening. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, a dear and close friend of the family, Rav Yosef Landa, Rav of Chabad of Greater St. Louis, and Rav Menachem Greenblatt, the Maradatra of Agudat Yisrael, and the Rosh Kolol of the St. Louis Kolol. We'll conclude at the end of the Hespedim with a Kamal Rachamim and a Kaddish. Thank you.
Before I begin my Hesped, we'd just like, on behalf of the family, to make 2 announcements. First of all, the family wants to thank everybody who helped them throughout these years. When Rav Rifkin and Rebbetzin Rifkin were sick, and they asked that I make mention specifically of 2 doctors, Dr. Gary Goldstein and Dr. Joel Perlmutter, who showed tremendous devotion and dedication to both Rav Rifkin and Rebbetzin Rifkin. I also want to announce that Shiva will be observed in New York, in the house of Yocheved Rubin. She'll be coming back from Eretz Yisrael Wednesday afternoon. So Wednesday afternoon, Thursday, and early Friday. That's the only place where there will be Nichum Avelim. Those who are not able to go to New York, if you want to offer words of Nechama, you could call her in her house. When I heard Motzei Shabbos about the passing of Hagaon Rav Shalom Rifkin, I was somewhat stunned, even though we knew for years that he was sick, incapacitated, but we got used to the fact that he struggled so hard to live. I think that part of it is that Torah and him was one. And even when he was incapacitated, it was clear to us many times when we visited him, that he would be aware. I think he was mentally involved in the learning of Torah, and I would notice when I would mention words of Torah, or Reb Nissim would mention sometimes words of Chassidus, when we went in together, his face would light up, as it would light up when we put tefillin on him. And because of that, the news that he passed away was almost shocking. But then I remembered a certain thought that is said over in the name of the Bala Tanya. Bala Tanya says, so I heard, that the call of the shofar, the sound of the shofar, is the sound of the neshama. It's the cry of the neshama, wanting to join its source. As we said in the Haftorah today, Dirshu Hashem b'himotzo, during the 10 days of Aseres Yemei Tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is found in our midst. And when we sense, when we hear the sound of the shofar, according to the Bala Tanya, is the cry of the neshama, wanting to join, because neshama is a chelak elokai mimal, so wanting to join its source. However, the question is, why specifically this Rosh Hashanah? And I think, in order to understand that, we have to understand the relationship that existed between Rav Rifkin and Rebbetzin Rifkin. They weren't two people. They were one person. And so long as Rebbetzin Rifkin was alive, Rav Rifkin felt that his total neshama would not be joining its source. Because him and Rebbetzin Rifkin, emotionally, were one neshama. But since Rebbetzin Rifkin passed away, when it was Hashem b'himatzo, there was this desire to join the source of his neshama. When one thinks about Rav Rifkin, it's not enough to think of him in terms of the situation we find in America today. But we have to think of him in the terms of America. He came here as a young boy. In terms of America, the way it existed at that time, in a sense, the Gemara tells us, Hillel Mechayev Aniyim. Somebody says, I wasn't able to learn Torah because I was too poor. So they say, well, you're more poor than Hillel. There are certain people that are symbols. It's not that there aren't tests in life. There are tests in life. But Rav Rifkin is a symbol for a person who went through all the tests of life, whether it was the tests of sickness or the tests of growing up in a society to which Torah was foreign, and become a gadol b'Torah, come one of the outstanding American Dolim. I once heard from my father that the Torah tells us in La Parshas Lech Lecha about Avraham that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Veheye Bracha, and you will be the symbol of Bracha. That somebody, Rashi says, who wants to give a blessing to his son or to somebody else, would say, Yehei Kavraham, be like Avram. And the Torah tells us also about Menashe and Ephraim. B'cha yivarech Yisrael leimor yisimcha elehim kefraim ucha Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe are also the symbols of bracha. What is the common denominator between Avram Avinu on one hand and Ephraim and Menashe on the other hand? But echad haya Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu stood alone. He was the first one. He had no community to support him. And he became a makir esboro. He recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he went into the service of God. Ephraim and Menashe, even though they were brought up in the house of Yosef HaTzadik, but nevertheless, the house of Yosef HaTzadik, the Mishnah LeMelech of Egypt, was not cut off from Egyptian society. And we know the Egyptian society, especially in those days, was full of immorality and full of idolatry. Nevertheless, Ephraim and Menashe were able to overcome the test of the influence of society. And because of that, they were identified with Avram to be the symbols of bracha. In a sense, we could say that Rev Rifkin was like Menashe and Ephraim. He was brought up in the house of one of the greatest Rosh Yeshivas in the history of American yeshivas. But he did not hide from society. And nevertheless, he was able to come, the gadol that he was, the posek that he was, the tzaddik that he was. He had the strength of Menashe and Ephraim. And I think this could be explained with the Rambam in Shmona Prakim. The Rambam in Shmona Prakim says there are two types of righteous people. Two types of tzaddikim. There is the chassid hameula. My father used to refer to the chassid hameula as the person who was born a tzaddik. I would say the person who righteousness emanates from inside him. And then there is the tzaddik that is the Moshe Berucho. The tzaddik that has to contend with himself. But he's successful in overcoming his Yetzihara. What is the difference between the Chassid Hameula and the Moshe Berucho? The Chassid Hameula, the righteous emanates from inside him. It's internal and expresses itself with its deeds. Whereas the Moshe Berucho, on the contrary, it's the external that sometimes affects the internal. When one looks at the life of Rav Rifkin, I think that we can easily identify him as the Chassid Hameula. He was the person who internally was a tzaddik. And his sitkas on the outside was just an expression of his whole disposition on the inside. And because of that, he didn't have problems with the outside society, because his source of strength was internal, not external. We are now in the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, the 10 days of Tshuva, that starts with Rosh Hashanah and ends with Yom HaKippurim. Yom Kippur, as a day of Tshuva, is easy to understand. Yom Kippur, we fast. We have the Chamei Shinuyim. We say the Vidui. We say the confessional prayer. We cry to God. We ask for atonement. We ask for forgiveness. Rosh Hashanah, on the other hand, according to most poskim, you're not allowed to cry. You're not allowed, with the exception of Dari, you're not allowed to say Vidui. How does Rosh Hashanah manifest itself as a day of tshuva? But I think, and this is gives insight, I think, to one of Rav Rifkin's main characteristics. I think we say in the Haggadah, Ilu kervanu lifnei har Sinai v'lo nasan lanu es haTorah dayenu. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu had brought us close at Mount Sinai and didn't give us the Torah, that in itself would have been great. What would have been so great about coming to Mount Sinai and not getting the Torah? But the answer is, at Mount Sinai, besides getting the Torah, the Jewish people experienced HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was revelation there. And how did HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how did God make His presence known? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made His presence known through the Kol HaShofar, uvekol shofar hafata, with the sound of the shofar, you made your presence known. How does a Jew come to sin? A Jew doesn't just reject the mitzvahs of the Torah. First, he rejects the experience of Har Sinai. Ilu kervanu lifnei Har Sinai, you brought us close to Mount Sinai. It doesn't mean you brought us close to the mountain. It means you brought us close to you. We were able to sense your presence at Mount Sinai. A Jew sins by first making believe he doesn't sense the presence of God. A Jew who sinned, in a sense, is rejecting Sinai. And before he can re-accept the Torah of Sinai, he has to re-undergo the experience of Sinai. He has to perpetuate the experience of Sinai. And that's the Kol HaShofar. Perpetuating the experience of sensing the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I could say about Rav Rifkin that if there was a person who in a sincere way could say, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Summit, that he sensed the presence of God constantly, it was Rav Rifkin. I remember he had the sense of Yiras Shamayim. I always admired that. In every area, whenever you talked to him, there was fear of God. When a Shaila came up, it could have been the smallest Shaila, but to him it was the biggest Shaila. Because he wasn't just answering, is it mutter or should you do it or shouldn't do it? He was speaking in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was giving over the Torah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it was with such trepidation, with such fear. I once went with him when he went to observe the Shechita here. I'm telling you, I visited many slaughterhouses. I never saw a Rav HaMachshir, a Rav, be so careful, so concerned, watching so carefully as Rav Rifkin did. You saw the Yiras Shamayim. Today, people somehow are able to separate the Torah from the sensing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the Yiras Shamayim. In Rav Rifkin, the two came together. the experience of Sinai and the Torah of Sinai were one in Rav Rifkin. I already mentioned Rav Rifkin's father was one of the greatest Rosh Yeshivas in the history of American yeshivas. He had thousands of Talmidim. And whenever you talk with a Talmud of his, they always express the love that they had for him. And everybody knew that he was a unique person, Rav Rifkin's father. In other words, he was a Goan in Litvish Lomdus, but he was able to combine it, and not as two separate things. If you looked at the Chiddushei Torah he published, he was able to combine it with the Chassidus that was part of his Lubavitcher tradition. And Rav Rifkin, following in his father's path, also had this ability to combine the Litvish alumdus, Yeshivish alumdus, however you want to call it, with the warmth of Hasidic thought. But he had an additional task, a task that his father didn't have. Being a Rav in a number of communities, he had the task of being a posek. And he was a special type of posek. He was not the posek that we hear of today. The poskim we hear of today are those that quote the Mishneh Berurah, they can quote an Igros Moshe, they can quote a number of Sfarim. Rav Rifkin, he was from the old school. Of course, he knew all the Achronim. Read some of his articles on Halachic Shailas that were published in the Hadarom and in other Torah magazines. He quotes all the Shitas Achronim. But he starts with the source. It was he had the tradition of the poskim of old, the poskim from Europe, that today has become very, very rare. I remember, now as a young boy in yeshiva, Rav Rifkin at that time was Rav in Seattle, hearing that many of the Gdolei HaPoskim, some of whose Sfarim are today used on contemporary Shilas by everybody, quoted by everybody, expressed their admiration for Rav Rifkin's knowledge in Hilchos Gittin. Because sometimes a get had to go to Eretz Yisrael, and there were all kinds of questions. And he would discuss through mail, he would discuss the Shilas with them. And they were all overwhelmed that in America, a posek of that stature grew up. And I remember my father's atzal, when he had a serious shaila that had to do with Eishes Ish, about Gittin. So even though he felt the halach is a certain way, he didn't want to be done a shaila of mamzeris. He didn't want to be done yechidi. He didn't want to paskin himself. So after he came to his conclusion, he would call Rav Moshe Feinstein, sometimes my uncle, sometimes Rav Henkin, to discuss the shaila with them. I remember when I first became a rabbi, I had a shaila of that nature from a member of my shul. And I discussed it with my father. And my father felt that it was mutter, whatever the shayla was. But he said to me, he said, you have to ask two other rabbanim also. So I said to him, who should I ask? At that time, it was impossible to contact Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Henkin had already passed away. Who should I ask? He said to me, contact Rav Rifkin and anybody else that you want. But the one person I had to contact was Rav Rifkin. I remember many years ago, there was a dinner here in St. Louis in honor of Rav Rifkin. I came in, I spent the weekend here. I think I even gave a shiur in the Young Israel that Shabbos. And I was talking with Yecheskel Rubin, Rav Zichrono Levracha, Rav Rifkin's son-in-law. And we were talking about Rav Rifkin. And he pointed out something to me that I knew already. Because I came a number of times to the Rifkin home, and I would look through the Svarim in the library. And he said to me, he said, look on the side of the Svarim, on the margins of the Svarim. And Rav Rifkin had an enormous library. It says, Ha'aris, comments, on all the margins. He's able to write. He writes on every inyan that there is. And in my discussions with Rav Rifkin, I mentioned he was great in halacha, he was great in chassidus, he was great in lamdas. He was somehow able to merge the three as one. When his notes on chassidus, sometimes he turned the chassidus into halacha. And the notes in halacha were turned into chassidus in machshava. He had that special ability. It was all one by him. I remember Reb Cheskel Rubin, he mentioned to me also, at that time when we were talking about his father-in-law, Reb Rifkin, he said, there's a certain Rambam, Reb Chaim, in the Sefer, Hilchos Rotzeach Hashmiras Nafesh. You can read it 100 times, and you won't understand what he's saying. He says, but my father-in-law explained it to me. He said, and after I heard the explanation, it was very clear. I knew immediately which Reb Chaim he was talking about. He didn't mention Reb Tzeach Hashmiras Nafesh. He said, a Reb Chaim. Because the explanation that he told me was the explanation I heard from my father as well in the Reb Chaim. But my father, whenever he would say it, he would say, it's very vague in the Sefer, but this is how I heard it from my father. But Rav Rifkin was able to understand what Reb Chaim was saying without having heard it, just by reading the Reb Chaim. He had that clarity of understanding. I think that even more outstanding than his gaonus, his intellectual achievement, was his personality traits. The respect, the regard, the sensitivity that he had for every person. Jew, non-Jew. He recognized the Tzelem Elokim in every person. He treated everybody with respect. And he earned their respect because of that. People who had no idea what Torah was all about. But they came to respect Torah because they came to respect Rav Rifkin. It was like Avraham Avinu, that people out of respect for Avraham Avinu, they came to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Especially, he excelled in all midos, but was very special was his anivas. He was a man that knew kol haTorah kula. He was a man that the Gdol Yisrael, when he was young, recognized his power as a posek on the most serious shailas. But if he had a shaila, before he would paskin very often, he would discuss it with others, with people less than him. He had special anivus. He did not hold himself above anybody else. When it comes to midos, you can't learn midos from schmoozing, from speeches, from shiurim. Midos can only be learned from example. And those that were close to Rav Rifkin had a teacher not just in Torah, not just in Halacha, but had a special, special teacher in Midos. I would say, suggest that in combining his Torah knowledge with his personality traits, he was one of the Gdolei HaDor. He was one of the greatest of our generation. There is a very interesting medrash. My uncle quotes a pshat from my grandfather on it. The medrash says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create man, so Tzedakah said, create man. Chesed said, create man. But Emes and Shalom said, do not create man. And my uncle mentioned in the name of my grandfather, and I think I heard this also from my father, that why did Emes and Shalom not want to create man? Because they knew that Emes and Shalom very often contradict each other. When you fight for Emes, when you stand behind Emes, so sometimes you can't be devoted to Shalom, you can't be devoted to peace. And very often, Shalom, peace, is used as an excuse not to be devoted to Emes. That's how my grandfather explained it. But then the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Emes and he threw it down on the ground. And he said, Emes meyaretz tizmach. Truth will grow from the ground. What does that mean? Something that grows is natural. It's not artificial. Building, something artificial. Growing is natural. There are two types of emes. There are two types of truth. There is truth that is sincere, that is natural, that comes from the inside. And there is truth that comes, that's only from the outside. That's not natural, that's artificial. Rav Rifkin was able to combine Emes and Shalom. Why? Because his truth was real truth. his truth when he was dedicated to Emes. And he never compromised his Emes. When he was dedicated, his dedication to Emes, it was real truth, it was natural truth. It didn't stem from, it wasn't extraneous. It stemmed from the inside, it was natural. It was Emes Meyaretz Titzmach. The Emes grew from the ground. It was a natural Emes. And it's because of these traits that he had that in his dedication to Emes, he was able to also be an Ish HaShalom, to be a person of peace. He wanted peace very, very badly. And he was able to reach out and thereby earn the respect of many people. Many people who had different types of backgrounds. But from him, they were able to feel the warmth of Torah and to come closer to Torah. Some of them later became Rosh Yeshivas. Some of them later joined the Orthodox community. And some even outside the Orthodox community, because they knew Rav Rifkin and they knew his Rebbetzin, they are closer to Torah today than they were before. I was told, I don't remember by who, perhaps by my father, that the Tosfos Yontif died during Aseret Yemei Teshuva. And the Briska Rav, my father's uncle, died Erev Yom Kippur. And at both their levayas, at the Briska Rav's levaya, it was said by his son-in-law, Hagaon Rav Michal Feinstein Zatzal, he said, Chazal say that if a person dies during Aseret Yemei Teshuva, it's a siman ra, it's a bad sign. He says, but in halacha we know that edus is greater than siman. And there are certain people that we could say anan sade. We're all witnesses. About Rav Rifkin, we could say anan sade. We're all witnesses about his fear of God. We're all witnesses about his love of Torah. We're all witnesses about his devotion to all his brothers and sisters in Klal Yisrael. We're all witnesses about the covet of brios that he showed every human being. It's anan sade. It's the strongest form of evidence there is. A siman doesn't carry any weight. We all know, we all saw, and it's our task now to remember what we saw. And in a sense, to tell future generations, to tell our children, that we knew a person who not only was great in Torah, who was not only great in Midos, who was devoted to all of the Jewish people, and showed respect to all of mankind. And more than anything else, he was very sincere. It was not just the script that he was following. It came from the inside out. I'm afraid that represented a generation that is almost gone. He is from the last of that generation. The American generation, I think, is from the outside in. But if we use Rav Rifkin as an example, even from the outside in, we'll be able to use our manner of behavior to have the proper attitudes internally as well. just to announce that there's still some seats up front over here. It was the last day in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu. And just yesterday we read in the Torah portion of Hazinu, Vayechal Moshe Ledaber, and Moshe concluded to speak. Vayomer Aleihem, and he said to them, to the Jewish people, Simu Levavchem, pay attention, L'chol hadvarim, to all the words asher anochi meyid b'chem, which I had spoken to you. Moshe had just concluded his rather extensive farewell address to all of the Jewish people. The entire book of Devarim. A mere two verses later, the Torah recounts God's directive to Moshe to ascend on the mountain on Har Nevo, where his physical life will come to an end. And at this point, Moshe tells them to pay attention. This seems rather puzzling. Is that the appropriate point in an address to say, please pay attention, after you have finished your speech? Wouldn't it have been more beneficial to exhort his listeners to pay attention before he spoke? So the Hasidic writings explain that there are two kinds of paying attention. To be sure, Moshe did what he needed to do so that the Jewish people heard the words which he said and understood them well. But that may have been paying attention on an academic level. They heard the words. They understood what he said. But Moshe wondered, were they getting it? Were they really tuning in? Were they drawing the applicable conclusions that would be effective in transforming their own lives? So Moshe's call to the Jewish people at the very end of his life, Simu levavchem, pay attention, not just to hear my words well, but to live them, and to allow the lessons to seep into their personal and meaningful consciousness in a way that will be effective. This, the second kind of paying attention, requires an entirely new and altogether separate effort on the part of the listener. It demands personal reflection. It calls upon us to ponder, to connect with the words, and to apply the lessons in a practical way. When a death occurs, the verse tells us, V'hachai yitein el liboy, the living shall take the heart. And that is our task today. I was privileged to have a close relationship with our Mor da'asra, Rabbi Sholem Rifkin, Rav Sholem ben Rav Moshe Dovber, Zatal, over the last 25 plus years. I learned a great deal from him. On occasion, I felt like the proverbial fly on the wall in Rabbi Rifkin's study. I paid attention to the delightful and noble character traits of this exemplary and very humble individual. I watched his interactions, and I paid attention, just as I am sure many others did. Now our challenge is to pay attention again, this time in the hope that we will really get it, and that hopefully we'll be able to emulate those noble traits of Rabbi Rifkin's very full and productive life in our own personal and communal lives, as rabbis, as laymen, as individuals, as family members, and as community leaders. Rabbi Rifkin's rabbinic style was unlike what we usually see. He was an altogether different kind of rabbi. He personified the Talmudic interpretation of the verse, V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, you shall love your God. Says the Talmud, what does it mean to love God? She'yehei shem shamayim is ahev al yodcho.
It means, says the Talmud, that you lead your life and act in a manner that makes others love God. People look at you and say, there goes an individual whose life is a godly life. And as a result, they come to love and to admire God and His Torah as well. And Rabbi Rifkin did just that. As a Rav, he maintained the highest standards of halachic integrity, and he did so in a manner that made him and the Torah beloved by all who came into contact with him. There are leaders who will write articles and books and give fiery speeches that will be read and heard by thousands of people. But Rabbi Rifkin's way of leadership was different. His was the way, as the prophet speaks of the future redemption, Va'atem, to look to echad echad, you will be gathered and collected one by one. He touched lives one at a time. And the result of his many decades in the rabbinate is that in whatever community he served, there are hundreds and hundreds of individuals who make up the Rabbi Rifkin fan club. Individuals and families whose lives were transformed and rejuvenated simply by their association with Rabbi Rifkin. They did mitzvah simply because Rabbi Rifkin said so. I recall one friend who was invited to attend a seminar that claimed to prove decisively that God gave the Torah at Mount Sinai. And he said, why do I need to go to that? This friend said to me, I believe that God gave the Torah because Rabbi Rifkin said so. And he did all that with the sweetness of honey and without an organized, sophisticated outreach machine. The Torah's ways are ways of peace and pleasantness. He would often say, very often say, my name is Sholem. He was blessed with what his daughter Yocheved describes as bucket loads of chayin, of charm. His was a magnetic personality. People stuck to him like you stick to honey. He didn't work his charm in anyone. He didn't need to do that, and he was far too humble to do that. You were just drawn to his sweetness. He had a smile that filled the room with warmth. He had the perfect humorous comment said in the right way and at the right time that could disarm and diffuse an otherwise tense situation. He fulfilled the Mishnah's instruction of Avei Mekabel as Kol HaAdam B'Sever Ponim Yofis, greet every person with a pleasant countenance. And by every person, I mean every person. He was fully engaged when speaking with you, no matter who you were. He wasn't looking over your shoulder to the next person, who might perhaps be a bigger macher in the community. He abhorred parochialism. He had absolutely no taste for it. He loved every Jew and would be everyone's rabbi, regardless of how you labeled yourself. I would hear from him how he would lament the parochialism that plagued the Jewish community, including the Orthodox community. Not only was he not part of that, he was totally baffled by it. It mystified him. To him, it was totally not understandable. While he certainly identified with a specific school of thought, he rarely would let that show, and only if you would twist his arm, because he wanted everyone, to feel absolutely comfortable with him. A rabbi without a label, if you will. He saw himself, and indeed he was, an ambassador for Yiddishkeit, for Torah and mitzvahs, to the entire Jewish community. And his approach was to be medaber lefi ruchoi shel kol echod v'echod, to be able to speak to each person in that person's language. Would not surprise me, therefore, if many are somewhat unaware of Rabbi Rifkin's very deep Chabad ties. Rabbi Rifkin hailed from elite Chabad families, the creme de la creme. His father, Harav Moshe Dovber Rifkin, Zatzal was a very respected senior disciple of the Rashab, the fifth Rebbe, while the Chabad Yeshiva was still in the town of Lubavitch. His mother, Rebbe Tzinacha Heber Rifkin, was a close personal friend with Rebbe Tzinchaya Mushka, the wife of the late Lubavitcher Rebbe. Their friendship went back to their childhood years in Russia. In addition to his vast and broad knowledge in the many areas of Torah, Rabbi Rifkin was steeped in the teachings of Chabad Hasidism. I consider it a special feather in my cap, my black hat, that is, that for an extended period of time we would study Hasidus together in the early hours each Sunday morning in Rabbi Rifkin's study. His arrival in St. Louis was at the behest of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, who in 1949 wrote the congregation Nusach Ari, that he asked Rabbi Rifkin to serve as their rabbi. The previous Rebbe, who was known to avoid exaggeration and would write very sparingly with titles and praises, speaks of Rabbi Rifkin as possessing an amazing knowledge of Torah, with an extraordinary breadth of knowledge, including the knowledge of the esoteric, with a conduct which is meticulous and very pleasant middos personality traits. Keep in mind that Rabbi Rifkin at that time was all but 20 years of age. In his personal Torah study, Rabbi Rifkin was what we would call in the yeshivish world a masmid, always learning, always studying. The margins of his books, as Rav Soloveitchik mentioned, and he had an impressive collection of them, were liberally annotated with brilliant insights, sometimes pointing out a possible contradiction, sometimes drawing attention to an insightful parallel idea elsewhere. He knew a lot of stuff that others didn't know, but he was very humble about it. He always delighted me with his off-the-beaten-track rabbinic citations, the kind of stuff that would stump your everyday run-of-the-mill rabbi. Finally, to Yocheved and to Harav Ben Tzion. It can sometimes be challenging growing up in the shadow of great parents, community leaders, popular and respected personalities. But what an honor and what a privilege you have had. Even during the most trying period of the last several years, your parents' illness, father and mother, and other personal challenges, you have both been exemplary in your kibud av v'em. Know that we often heard from your parents how very proud they were of you, and know that our community holds both of you in the highest esteem, and we look up to you with a great deal of admiration and pride. We were enormously blessed with the presence and the leadership of Rabbi Rifkin within our community. We all observed his sterling character, his pleasant disposition, his genuine love and respect for every Jew, his abiding desire for community harmony, his profound wisdom and scholarship. Now, as we prepare to bid farewell to his physical presence, let us do as Moshe Rabbeinu said, Simu levavchem, let us pay attention. Let us reflect on those noble traits and resolve to grow with them in our day-to-day dealings with ourselves, with our families, and with our fellow Jews.
Rabbi Lander, what does it mean, a run-of-the-mill rabbi? To echo the words I uttered on the second day of Rosh Hashanah as I served as chazan for Musaf and my shul, Hineni ha'ani mimas. I approach this awesome task of eulogizing Harav Hagon HaTzadik Reb Shalom Rifkin, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, with great trepidation. The Talmud admonishes one who is lax and understated in offering words of hesped for a Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar. There are many facets to the personality of our great chief rabbi, our Mora D'Asra, Rav Rifkin Zatzal, and some of them were elaborated on very eloquently by Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rabbi Landa. There are indeed Torah giants who epitomize various aspects of Torah greatness. There are those who excel in lumdus, the erudition of Torah. Others excel in their knowledge of halacha. There are those who are endowed with the ability to eloquently communicate their Torah thoughts, while others share their Torah through svarim, through books that they author. There are Torah giants whose greatness remains confined to their study and dissemination of Torah, to those who are already committed and searching, but not necessarily in their ability to reach out and kindle souls. There are those who are blessed with an affable and pleasant demeanor, while others are blessed in other ways. In Reb Shalom Rifkin, we saw it all. It was a complete package. Tell you the truth, about 30 years ago, I was living in Eretz Yisrael. I was learning in Kollel, early 80s, and I saw a sign that went up on the walls in Yerushalayim, you know, when a funeral is about to come through. So there's a notification. They put up the posters on the walls, and I remember reading that the late Chief Rabbi of St. Louis, Rav Eifenstein, his Levi was coming to Eretz Yisrael. And I remember reading that, and St. Louis seemed so distant. At that time, I had never even been in St. Louis. Not far, I'm from Memphis, but I'd never been in St. Louis. And I remember thinking about Rav Eifenstein, but I always had heard about Rav Eifenstein. Little did I realize at that time that I'd be standing here eulogizing the next chief rabbi of St. Louis. In our community, the aspect of his Torah was probably most evident to us. The most evident aspect of his Torah was probably his prowess in halacha, all subjects pertaining to Jewish law. You go and you ask Rabbi Rifkin a shaila, ask him a question. From matters of kashrus to the intricacies of mikvah, to his expertise in Gittin, just to name a sample of his breadth of knowledge. He was recognized as a halachic authority both nationally and internationally. He served as a dayan on the RCA Beis Din for many years, as well as serving as the Beis Din coordinator. He was also active on the OU Kashrus Commission. As the need for Jewish divorce documents, Gittin, became apparent in the Soviet Union, Rabbi Rifkin was sent there, where he was Masader, where he presided over 50 Gittin in communist Russia. He even smuggled Gittin from Soviet Russia to the United States in his hat. Couldn't happen today with TSA. His Gittin were accepted without question in every community the world over. The leading kashrus organizations in the United States, notably among them the OU, recognize our community's OV kashrus endorsement under Rav Rifkin's authority. Anything that was associated with Rabbi Rifkin was unconditionally approved and respected. St. Louis is one of the last remaining communities in the United States which provides local shechita. As mentioned earlier by Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Rifkin took great pride in this reality, and as Rav HaMachshir, he personally made regular appearances at the slaughterhouse to inspect the knives used for the shechita. He was most vigilant about assuring the ongoing kosher status of the Vad Ha'er Mikvos, and expended a great deal of mental energy in monitoring every aspect of this extremely halachic, delicate, vital resource. During Rabbi Rifkin's tenure as our Chief Rabbi Ezer Rav HaRasha, he presided over hundreds of gittin, expanded the mikveh from one facility to three, and under his leadership presented our community with two Erevin. What amazes me about his accomplishments in the area of halacha is that most Rabbanim who accomplish only half as much must dedicate numerous years training in yeshiva and kollel way into their 30s or beyond. Rabbi Rifkin, while still a single man, moved to St. Louis in 1949 at the age of 24. Rabbi Landis said 20, we'll split the difference. It's still young. To assume the pulpit of the old Nusachari. Was it called Nusachari B'nai Zion at that time? It was just Nusachari. At that time, there was no yeshiva or kollel where a 24-year-old could continue to grow and to tackle new and difficult horizons in Torah scholarship. Just to share his background with you, and some of this is mentioned, Rabbi Rifkin was born in Yerushalayim in Jerusalem some 85 years ago and moved to New York with his parents at the age of 3. Rabbi Rifkin spent his formative years in Yeshiva Torah V'Das. He was one of the outstanding students of the late renowned Rosh Yeshiva Rav Shlomo Hyman, Zecher Tzadik Devracha. Rav Shlomo Hyman was one of the great Lithuanian star Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Rifkin mentioned his name to me hundreds of times, Rav Shlomo Hyman. It's as if he still was learning with Rav Shlomo. Rabbi Rifkin was one of an elite group of yeshiva students, many of whom went on to become great Rosh Yeshiva and Rabbonim. Rav Shlomo Hyman entrusted Rabbi Rifkin to take notes of his shiurim, and many of those notes were used later when the Sefer of Rav Shlomo Hyman was published. After receiving his smicha from Rav Tomashov Zatzal, he continued to learn under the great Gadol Rav Reuven Grozovsky in the Beis Medrash Elyon, which was an extension of Yeshiva Torah V'Das. By the time Rabbi Rifkin arrived in St. Louis, he was an accomplished lamdan and musma. Prior to his move in St. Louis, he served as a Rebbe in Mesifta Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin in New York. Rabbi Rifkin ingested Torah from his mother's milk. As we heard about his great illustrious father, Rav Moshe Dober Rifkin, who served as Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshiva Torah V'Das for some 5 decades and taught thousands of students, and he taught the smicha class. Many of the fine Rabbonim in America received smicha from Rabbi Rifkin's father. Rabbi Rifkin's mother, Nachafega, was an extremely talented woman. She authored the Reishis Chochma, the popular handbook to teach Hebrew reading, and she produced records, for those who remember what records are. She was an artist as well. She made an indelible imprint on Chinuch in America. Rav Shalom Rifkin Zatzal then was reared by two amazing parents whose students dotted the broad landscape of American Jewry. It certainly was a rarity for an individual who was so accomplished in his Torah to move so far away from the center of Yiddishkeit as a bocher, as a single man. It was virtually unheard of in those years. He was driven by a passion to spread Yiddishkeit, and spread Yiddishkeit he did. As rabbi of Nusachari, he inspired his congregants, both adults and children. Some of them are here right now and can tell the story better than I can. He learned with them, spent time with them, and he loved them. This continued until 1954, when he married his Eishes Chayil, Rebbetzin Pesi Rifkin, Aleha Shalom. The rabbi and Rebbetzin together devoted the first 5 years of their marriage to their beloved shul and community until 1959, when they relocated to Seattle, Washington, where he served as rabbi of his shul until 1969. It was in Seattle that Rabbi Rifkin studied gittin, how to facilitate a get, from a Torah giant by the name of Rav Baruch Shapiro, Zichrono Livracha, who was a student of Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk. The Rifkins, along with their two children, Yocheved and Ben Zion, moved to Bayswater in Queens, New York, where they resided until 1983. Rabbi Rifkin served as Rav of his shul in Bayswater and at the same time became active in the Besdin of the Rabbinical Council of America. By this time, Rabbi Rifkin had achieved national status as a major posek. Throughout this period of time, Rabbi Rifkin had published numerous Torah essays in leading Torah journals, Notably among them, again, as Rabbi Soloveitchik mentioned, the Hadarom. I remember as a child when the Hadaroms would come out, was it biannual? I don't remember how. Biannual. And they would come and they would come in the mail. My father would just grab it with such anticipation. It was the most coveted Torah journal from the RCA. Rabbi Rifkin's notes, his Chiddushei Torah, appeared there regularly. There is a concept in Yiddishkeit known as Shmog Kogorim. A name is an indication and even a contributing factor in the development of one's character traits. There is perhaps no name that could capture Rabbi Rifkin's essence more perfectly than his own name, Sholem. He was a peaceful person, he sought peace and inspired peace. On Simchas Torah, we will read of the passing of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Torah tells us after his Petira Vayivku B'nei Yisrael as Moshe, and the Jewish people wept for Moshe. They mourned his loss. And Rashi comments that in contrast to this language of B'nei Yisrael, the Jewish people, the Torah in describing the response to the passing of Aaron HaKohen, the Torah says, Kol Beis Yisrael, Vayivku Oso Kol Beis Yisrael, all of the house of Israel wept. The mourning over Aaron HaKohen encompassed the entire Jewish people, Kol Beis Yisrael, whereas by Moshe, the Torah implies that there were those who did not weep. Rashi answers that everyone was affected by the death of Aaron because he was someone who pursued peace and facilitated peace between man and his friend and between man and his wife. Today we all mourn for Rav Shalom Rifkin, whose very essence was Shalom. It was his demeanor, it was in his speech, it was in his smile. Who among us has not been touched by his warmth, his softness, and genuine love? The great commentator, the Or HaChaim, offers another insight. When Aaron died, it resulted in the banishment of the clouds of glory that had hovered over and protected the Jewish people. His loss was tangibly felt by every Jew. This phenomenon did not occur, though, with the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. His death was not as acutely felt by the masses. Furthermore, when Moshe died, he was quickly replaced by his disciple Yehoshua. The divine spirit rested on Yehoshua, and the Jewish people were comforted by this. However, when Aaron HaKohen died, there was no successor, no one to fill the gap. His position was filled by his children, but his persona could never be replaced. And the Jewish people wept bitterly. They all wept. Dear friends, today we have lost our clouds of glory. Rav Shalom Rifkin was our splendor and our glory. The prestigious Kehillah of St. Louis no longer has its Mor D'Asra, its glory and splendor in its midst. As Rashi comments on the Pasuk, Vayetzi Yaakov Mibersheva, and Yaakov left the city of Beersheva, this tells us that the departure of a righteous person makes an impression. While the righteous person is in a city, Hu Hoda, Hu Ziva, Hu Hadora, he is its glory, he is its brilliance, he is its splendor. When he departs, the glory departs, the brilliance departs, the splendor departs. Rabbi Rifkin has been incapacitated. He had been incapacitated for several years, some 5 years or so, and out of the public eye. That should not diminish an iota of our grief and our recognition that our glory has departed and we suffer a devastating loss. Where does one encounter such a personality, such a rare blend of Torah and the understanding of the human condition? While in Seattle, Rabbi Rifkin earned a master's in social work. He indeed possessed an insight into human nature and had that uncanny ability to hone in and bring out the best in a person. There is a Hebrew word which describes Rabbi Rifkin's personality, ne'imus, sweetness, pleasantness. He was so non-judgmental. He made you feel so good and important. Whether you were an observant Jew, non-observant, affiliated, non-affiliated, a simple person, Rabbi Rifkin used to always say, a simple Jew, a delightful Jew, such a precious Jew. He always had a nice adjective describing a Jew. Whatever Jew, an intellectual, it made no difference. He related to each person on his or her level with absolutely no expectation and no demands. Rabbi and Rebbetzin Rifkin built a true sanctuary together. Their love and concern for each Jew was unparalleled. There is another word that I would be remiss if I did not interject at this point, and that is Ahavas HaTorah. To quote his own words, and how many times do we hear Rabbi Rifkin say this? His flaming love for Torah. I had the privilege many times, also Rabbi Soloveitchik, to look through the Sfarim in his library. It's funny, when something is true and it makes an impression, if there would be 10 people eulogizing tonight, we'd all say the same thing. Those Sfarim, the books, you walked into a study, they were open, they filled the desk, they filled the sofas. If you had to sit somewhere, I don't know where you'd sit. These wide sofas were full of Torah, of books, of Sfarim with notes. The ledgers of the pages of his books were filled with his own Torah thoughts and annotations. The range of his interests went from traditional Hasidic teachings to Musar, to Halacha Responsa, to the analytical and in-depth novelet of Rishonim and Achronim. But where did he have time to accomplish so much? Where do you find the time? The answer is, when you love Torah as much as Rabbi Rifkin did, you find time to learn and learn and never stop learning. Just as an addict could never have enough to feed his addiction, the Ohev Torah, the lover of Torah, could never have enough to feed his hunger for Torah. My wife and I visited Rabbi Rifkin Wednesday, just before Rosh Hashanah. Unfortunately, he was not responsive, although he looked good. I told him, alternating between English and Yiddish, hoping to get his attention, tonight is Rosh Hashanah. Tomorrow we crown Hashem as the King of the universe. There was still no response. And then I told him, Rabbi Rifkin, I remember all of those years that you gave us a Shabbat Shuvah Drasha for the entire community. And I remember you used to speak often about the Rambam's position on whether the mitzvah of tshuva constitutes a positive commandment or it's just a foregone conclusion that one will do teshuva and that in the aftermath of tshuva one is obligated to recite the confession. It's a discussion in the Sfarim. And I started to tell him that, and he started fluttering his eyes, he started to open, and his hands started to shake. And I said, and sometimes you used to say over the shir from Reb Shlomo Hyman, your Rebbe, on mitzvah trichas kavona hadokeya l'shir, I know that I was getting through. I know I was getting through. And I was so happy that I went, because then I knew I was sharing with him that it was Rosh Hashanah. And I'm told that Rabbi Monk went and blew the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and others went. A number of people would go regularly, and there were various levels of response. On a personal level, I felt so good when on several occasions Rabbi Rifkin would tell me how he appreciates our friendship and how he considers me a trusted chaver. I feel honored to have been referred to in this way by such an Adam Gadol. For all of Rabbi Rifkin's greatness, his scholarship, and his personal achievements, he was a very humble person. He learned with people who had very little background in Torah. He didn't think twice about spending time learning with young children as he did in his earlier years in St. Louis, in Seattle, and again in St. Louis, even when occupying the position of chief rabbi. It's unconventional to ask for a show of hands at a Leviah, but I would like to know how many of you or your children received their first Siddur or Chumash from Rabbi Rifkin. Unbelievable. I'm glad I did ask. That's a memory that you'll always have. That is a memory you'll always share. Dancing with Rabbi Rifkin in the shuls on Simchas Torah when he would make his rounds between the shuls here on Del Mar, taking turns. We all wanted a piece of Rabbi Rifkin on Simchas Torah and on Purim and on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. He would daven at Yom Gizrael, at Chabad, at Aguda, and he would divide his time, and we all felt that the hours that he spent in our shuls, it was an uplifting experience. I still think about that. And also in my shul, his shtender is still up front, and that's Rabbi Rifkin shtender. Rabbi Rifkin shtender on the other side of the Aron Kodesh, as you have a seat here. Today we eulogize and mourn the loss of that remaining Rav Harosh, the last remaining Rav Harashi, the last chief rabbi in America. This is the end of an era. It wasn't that long ago that I eulogized Rebbetzin Rifkin, and I said, today we eulogize the last chief Rebbetzin in America. He served this position with reverence and distinction. He took his responsibility very seriously, and oftentimes it would weigh on him greatly. He carried the burden of our entire community. Aside from his official position, he also served as a great ambassador for Torah and Yiddishkeit to Jews throughout the community. You know, you can't, that defies job description. You can have a job description for a rabbi or a chief rabbi, but what he accomplished goes way beyond that, way beyond what a contract could ever state. The ambassadorship he had, how he portrayed Torah and Yiddishkeit. He earned the respect, and by extension, the Orthodox community earned the respect. Our entire Kehillah was enhanced, and we enjoyed the kavod, the respect, because of Rabbi Rifkin, because he was a role model for Avos HaTorah and Avos Yisrael. Yes, we have lost our cloud of glory, our splendor, and our prestige, and there is no successor, just like there was no successor for Aaron HaKohen. Vayifku also Kol Beis Yisrael. And there was unbridled weeping and mourning. Because when there's no one to take the place, you have nothing to do but weep. Mi yiten lanu tmuraso. Where will we find such a replacement? We weep along with Yocheved and Rabbi Ben Zion. What a difficult, difficult year you've had, losing both parents in the same year. Our hearts go out to you. Hashem should give you the strength to deal with these emotions. Rabbi Rifkin, as your neshama ascends to Shemayim in this most auspicious time of the Jewish year, as you join your parents, your ancestors, your rebbeim, the great tzaddikim of previous generations, may you be a melitz yosher, an advocate on behalf of your daughter Yocheved, your son Rabbi Ben Zion, your grandchildren Nacha and Levi Yitzchak, your great-grandchildren, and on behalf of your beloved Kehillah of St. Louis, who adored you, who appreciated you, and who will forever miss you. Rabbi Rifkin, may your pure tefillos intercede on behalf of Klal Yisrael, bringing Yeshuas, salvation, refuas, healing, shalom, peace in Eretz Yisrael, peace to our brethren wherever they live, and the ultimate geula shlema b'mheru b'yameinu, the ultimate redemption. You are perfectly positioned during Aser Shemei Tshuva to help bring all of that about. Moch Hashem alekem dimim me'al kolponim, yei nishmasu tzvar v'tzvar achayim. I'd like to personally ask Mechila, I'd like to ask for your forgiveness, Rabbi Rifkin, for over the past 25 years, if I've done anything to cause you any grief or tzar, I sincerely apologize, and I hope you grant me Mechila.
Tzoras v'chem al rachamim, followed by the Kaddish. El mal rachamim shechen b'mirumim, ham seyem nechon nechon al kanfei hashchina. Bemalos kedoshim tohorim kezohar orakia mazilim lenishmas moreinu Rav Shalom ben Rav Moshe Dober shalach liolamovo bavur shen mispalenim lenu nishmaso beganei dentehe menuchaso Lachem bal rachamim, yastinei umesei sev gnafof niolamim,
Mitzeror, mitzora chaimes nishmaso, adonai unachaloso, v'yanuach b'shalom amishkavo, v'namar, amen. Shirem alas mimamakim krasicha, adonai, adonai shimo v'koli, kenes decha kashivos l'kol tachnunoi, אם אבנוס תשמעני אדוני מי עמוד כי מחס בכל למען תיבורי כי ויס אדוני כי וסו נפשי בלי דברו הוכלתי נפשי לאדוני משם לבוקר שמים לבוקר יחל ישראל על אדוני כי מדוני חסר ובי מוחדוס ויפטס ישראל מכל אבנוס
to escort the Aaron out and back into the car, and we'll follow along behind. Thank you.
There's no book. I'm sorry? Right. No. I did. I'm sorry. I don't have it. I think Rabbi... I think one of the rabbis referred to it. Rabbi, do you know the yeshiva in New York where you're going to have the...